I'm Seattle Times political reporter Jim Bruner.
And I'm Seattle Times City Hall reporter Dan Beekman.
Let's talk politics.
Welcome to episode 82 of The Overcast, the Seattle Times weekly politics podcast.
This week we're joined by Washington State Democratic Party Chair Tina Podlodowski. Thanks for joining us, Tina.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
By way of introduction, Tina Podlodowski was elected chair of the State Democratic Party in 2017. She is originally from Connecticut, got a computer science degree from the University of Hartford, worked at Microsoft in the early 1990s, served one term at the Seattle City Council, ran some nonprofits, including Lifelong AIDS Alliance, was a senior policy advisor to Mayor Ed Murray, ran for Secretary of State in 2016, and then, like we said, now is running the State Democratic Party as we head into some pretty significant midterms. So we had your counterpart on here last week, Caleb Heimlich, chair of the Washington State Republican Party, and kind of asked him about the surprise of filing week. So we'll start there with you, too. On filing week, suddenly, a former state Republican Party chair, Susan Hutchison, jumped into the U.S. Senate race against Maria Cantwell. What did you make of that?
That the Republican Party in Washington State was incredibly desperate when it came to getting a Senate candidate, because right now, or right at filing deadline, a couple of minutes before filing deadline, the top of their ticket would have been Joey Gibson, the head of Patriot Prayer, the alt-right guy that the Southern Poverty Law Center writes about. And I think that would have been to the detriment of the party, and they didn't have a bench, so they convinced Susan to jump in.
And there were, like, I think 29 candidates in the end who jumped in, including several lesser-known Republicans, like you said, Joey Gibson, known maybe for reasons that are not terribly helpful to the Republican Party.
More infamous than famous.
Yeah, and there's a Seattle police captain, Keith Swank, also jumped in. But do you think that, though, Susan Hutchison, you know, being a little bit better known, could help the party? Do you think she has a chance against Maria Cantwell? You know, she jumped in, she called Maria Cantwell a fake senator and a ghost in the Senate.
How very Trumpian. And that's sort of Susan's way of doing business, right? No, she doesn't have a ghost of a chance against Maria Cantwell. I think what Susan will be doing is stirring up sort of Trumpian-like emotions around the state of Washington as she works this campaign trail. Look, the Republicans are in a tough spot, I think, in this particular cycle. If you look at the candidates that we've been able to field in the congressional races, if you look at the candidates we've been able to field in the legislative district races, it looks a little grim for Republicans in Washington State. So I think Susan, who was Trump's chief cheerleader during the 2016 election, will bring that same level of enthusiasm back and try to divide folks with a lot of misinformation and fake news.
Whether it's rhetoric from her or from Republicans in general and other races in the state right now, a lot of it is focused locally on Seattle and this perception of trying to drive this narrative that Seattle is a bunch of crazy liberal radical socialists who are doing things like trying to pass an income tax and tax the rich and pass a head tax on Amazon, and isn't that crazy and horrible. What do you make of that narrative or that strategy from the Republicans in the state?
Well, I think they're trying to throw things at the wall and see what will stick, right? Their big narrative for the 2018 elections was going to be this tax cut package at the national level. They tried to run on it in special elections in 2018. It's failed miserably. As I travel around the state of Washington, I ask people, where is your $4,000 that you were promised in your paycheck from the Republicans? And let me tell you, nobody has it. It gets a big cheer, and it just shows how ineffective the Republicans are. So they're going to try to throw these things as much as they possibly can. And it's not a real issue, right? It's not an issue that impacts folks in the races where they're picking their legislative representative or their congressional representative. So again, it's a bit of bait and switch in trying to work through the issues as opposed to really running on their own candidates and policies.
I understand, totally understand what you're saying there. But also, you know, some of the suburban and rural Democrats have felt a need, it seems like, to come out and say, you know, for example, with the head tax, I don't agree with that, or I would have done that differently, or I'm not one of those Seattle politicians. So is there maybe something there that that's demonstrated by them making such statements?
Well, I think we should all take a step back and look at the issue of affordable housing. I don't think that that's just an issue in Seattle. I think it's an issue in Yakima and Ponderay County and every place in the state of Washington. In some ways, whether you agree with the head tax proposal or you disagree with the head tax proposal, it sure as heck was a cry for help and support to try to put together something that worked as a package to deal with not just folks who are living on the street, but also building affordable housing. In the time, last year and a half, as we've sort of dithered on different proposals related to affordable housing, the average median cost of a house in the city of Seattle has gone up $131,000. That's in a year and a half. So we're talking there about teachers, we're talking about firefighters, we're talking about police officers and nurses and so many other folks in the city who can't afford to be here, let alone the folks who are one paycheck away from being able to make their rent, or who are living essentially paycheck to paycheck. So I think talking about the head tax really takes us to this place of you can't solve this housing crisis unless you've got government and philanthropy and business and a whole bunch of other folks at the table looking at regional solutions. So my goal here is to say, look, how are we going to solve the problem? Let's stop sort of throwing things at each other. Let's get back to the table and get back to work to make this happen, because I do believe everyone wants to solve this problem.
Did you think the head tax was a good idea, though?
You know, I do think that it was a cry to say, hey, we've got to figure out some way to deal with this, given what we were seeing is needed in cash to work through these issues of affordable housing. I think it's a combination of things, though. I think that we need to look at zoning as one component of it. I think we need to make developing housing cheaper. And that's where you can bring the developers in to do that work. They understand how to build these buildings cheaper. Sometimes our code and sometimes our zoning doesn't allow us to do that. But on the other hand, look at Washington's tax system in totality. It is a very regressive tax system to depend only upon property taxes and sales taxes. It hits those of us who own homes and who've had homes for a long time. Our family, we've owned our house for 18 years, and currently our property tax bill is more than I got paid on my first two jobs. And then you look at folks at the lower end of the income spectrum for whom that sales tax is a higher and higher percentage of income. We're getting to these stop the madness sort of moments, and I'd like to bring us all together. And I think Democrats can do that in the next session in 2019.
Yeah, we have had people on this podcast talking about the property tax spike that just happened. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the legislature, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. I want to move to the congressional races. Like you said, I think you said that, you know, that the Democrats are basically on offense, no surprise, nationally and in this state, and in particular in the 5th Congressional District, seeing if you can flip that, seeing if Kathy McMorris Rogers can be defeated by Lisa Brown, the former state Senate Democratic leader. Let's start with that race. Do you think, I mean, that's a really difficult district. It's a very red district. Do you think Lisa Brown stands a chance there?
Yes, I think Lisa Brown's going to win that race. I absolutely think that the district has been changing. And if you look at where the voting population is in the 5th district, it really is in that core of Spokane. It's the 3rd legislative district, the 6th and the 4th. And that core represents 72% of the voters. Well, that core in the 3rd is very, very blue. And what we've seen happen is the voters have changed and their opinions have changed in both the 4th and the 6th. You look at what happened in the last cycle on the Spokane Valley City Council, for example. It flipped from a very conservative city council to a very progressive city council. So I think you're seeing that change happen. We've also worked as a party as well to look at two other big voting blocks in the 5th district. One is rural areas. And Democrats, frankly, hadn't been running in those races for a good 20 years. In the last cycle, we ran terrific candidates in the 7th legislative district. We're running great ones now in both the 16th as well as the 9th district. Those will tick up our vote totals. Those candidates don't necessarily need to win to add to Lisa Brown's vote total in making that happen. And the last piece is there's 60,000 college students in Congressional District 5. Those college students are far more predisposed to voting for Lisa Brown than they are for Kathy McMorris Rogers. Kathy's been there for 14 years. No one in the district can name more than one thing she might have done for them in those 14 years. Everything the Republicans said about Tom Foley, the Democrats and the people in the district are now saying about Kathy McMorris Rogers, that she's beholden to Washington, D.C., and it's time for her to go home.
For those who don't remember what almost seems like ancient history now, Tom Foley lost in the big Republican wave of 1994.
That's right.
He was Speaker of the House.
Yep.
I remember there were rumors flying at the time that the people in the district thought that George Nethercutt, who beat him, would become Speaker of the House. That may be apocryphal. But in any case, there are similarities. You've got Kathy McMorris Rodgers is the fourth-ranking House Republican, very closely tied to Paul Ryan. I've sort of wondered about the stories you see recently that the very conservative wing of the Republican Party is even maybe talking about pushing Paul Ryan out of the speakership even before the election is decided, and whether that could affect Kathy McMorris Rodgers. That being said, I think the Republicans that I've talked to have said, look, Lisa Brown was in the state legislature for a long time. She has a long voting record that includes a lot of attempts to raise taxes and raising tuition and things like that. Do you think that is going to hurt her chances in the district?
No, I think that Lisa has a great record of bringing common sense solutions to the district, and as Senate Majority Leader, working across the aisle to get those things done, something Kathy certainly is not a part of in any way, shape, or form. The number one issue in that district is health care. We've heard it time and time again, whether it's focus groups, whether it's tavern talks, all of these things is health care. Lisa Brown was the one who brought the medical school to Spokane, to be able to have a medical school at WSU Spokane and to home grow doctors, but also have clinics and a whole associated medical infrastructure that's a part of that. One of the biggest issues there in that district is rural health care. When folks can't get insurance, that's an issue, and certainly Kathy has not been helpful with that in any way, shape, or form. But even if they have insurance, they're driving 2, 3, sometimes 4 hours to get to their primary care provider. So building that health infrastructure has been one of the number one issues all the way through the 5th Congressional District. So I think Kathy's going to have a difficult time defending her stance on any of those.
Well, let's move over back to Western Washington, the 8th Congressional District. You've been accused of playing favorites a little bit and essentially putting out the word that Kim Schreier is the favorite candidate there. Is that true? And do you think that she can take on Dino Rossi, the best known Republican in that race?
Yeah, no, it's not true. And actually, if I had a candidate that I really was going to push for in this race, I think people who know me know I'm not a shrinking violet. And you'd know it if there was a candidate that I was going to advocate for. Look, we've got three great Democratic candidates in that race going up against Dino. Dino's a three-time loser statewide. He's lost twice for the gubernatorial race, once for the Senate race. He hasn't really won a race since 2010. I think we've got a great set of folks who get him on various aspects of the issues. And I think we have a district that's changed quite dramatically than the last time Dino ran in that district. So there's a terrific opportunity for Democrats to take the 8th back and to do so with some terrific fresh faces, too.
And we should say Kim Schreier, of course, is the pediatrician, for people who don't know, who got in pretty early, got in when Dave Reichert hadn't announced his retirement.
Right.
The other two Democrats in the race, the best known ones anyway, Jason Ritterizer, who's an attorney, and Shannon Hader, who is a former very, very high level official at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There was a poll recently that leaked out in the 8th District it was done for the House Majority PAC.
Yes, that's correct.
Which tries to elect Democrats, and I don't think really necessarily cares which one gets elected as long as they win. Right. That poll showed that on a first matchup, Dino Rossi was beating all these candidates in November, and that once the messaging was done, basically that it's possible that Jason Ritterizer is a better matchup in the fall against Dino Rossi, possibly because he has some Eastern Washington Ellensburg roots. Poll suggested maybe he could appeal to independent men in a way that others couldn't. What did you make of that? Do you worry that you could land on the wrong candidate and lose in November?
No, because if you look at that particular poll, I think what you saw was Dino's ceiling in that poll. Many folks in the district just don't know who Dino Rossi is. They don't know that he's thrown kids off health care. They don't know that he's been disingenuous in talking about balancing a budget when, in fact, if you go back to that legislative session, it was actually Governor Gary Locke, let's go back in history again, who put together that balanced budget proposal and so many other things. In that district, guns are going to be an issue. Dino Rossi, in one of his last runs, took almost $500,000 in NRA money to support his run in working through that. So I think as we start to pick away at the narrative of who Dino Rossi says he is and who Dino Rossi is, it's very quickly apparent that Dino can't get to the 50%. Now, if you look at that poll,
I'd say just really quickly, he has won a majority of votes in every election that he's ran in that district.
That was the last time was 8 years ago.
2010.
Yeah, that was 8 years ago. And the district has changed fairly dramatically. If you look at that district now, probably the best election that I would say is comparable to the electorate in that district, because the majority of the voters are suburban voters that are going from Issaquah down to Pierce County. Look at the Mongodingwa race against Jin Young. I think that that shows you a good sense of who's going to be out there and voting. It's a predominance of women who will be out there and voting. They are not going to be predisposed to Dino's social issues because he's anti-gay, he's anti-choice, he's anti-immigrant. So there's that piece of it. And then on the conservative side, in looking at budget issues, he really hasn't brought that home either. So we're going to put Dino in the box that really defines him, and but any one of our candidates can
push
win
back
that
a little
race.
Bit. And since 2010, the district was actually redrawn, the 8th mm-hmm. district, to become more conservative even than it had been.
But look at where the voters are in that district. All those voters are on the western edge of that district, again, from the suburbs from Issaquah down to Pierce County. If you look at that slice from Ellensburg all the way up to Wenatchee, you're looking at maybe 13% of the voting population. So let's be really, really clear about who's voting in that district.
So you don't need a candidate who can appeal to Chelan and Kittitas counties?
No, I think that those issues there are incredibly important to be able to talk through the things that people are really want to have a politician engage with on their lives. And that's jobs, it's healthcare, it's affordable housing, it's education and making sure that their kids get into a great program around education, particularly one leading to a job, whether that's an apprenticeship program through unions or community colleges. And then the last piece is a dignified retirement. You look at the folks who are living in that area, they're either approaching retirement age or they are in the middle of that squeezed generation where they're taking care of their kids and aging parents. And there's nothing the Republicans have done to indicate that they are going to save and invest in Medicare and Social Security. And that is a problem.
So if you're not picking one of those Democrats that we talked about and saying that's the my chosen candidate, what are the strengths of that each of them have that make them different from each other's candidates going up against someone like Dino Rossi?
Well, they all have their own personal strengths and weaknesses. And at this point in the campaign, what we're doing is investing in organizing on the ground and identifying the voters who are going to vote for the values that all three of those candidates espouse. Listen, we've been on the ground since last year with organizers in the 5th Legislative District, the 47th Legislative District, the 31st Legislative District, listening to voters and understanding what do they want in a congressional representative. I will put that on-the-ground knowledge and the data that we have around those voters up against the $10 million that Dino is probably going to get from a combination of Paul Ryan's PACs, the investments by Mike Pence, all of those things that are coming in as outside
money. So it sounds
money.
Like you're a little bit more focused right now what's wrong with Dino Rossi than what's particularly good about one of those candidates or each of them.
Well, I'm focused in on what's wrong about Dino Rossi, but everything is good about all three of those candidates. It's just looking at it through a different lens, right? They've all got their own strengths and weaknesses in their background. If the number one issue there is healthcare and also jobs, we've got a terrific employment lawyer in Jason. We've got a doctor in Kim. We've got another person in Shannon who's also a doctor who's worked at the CDC. I don't know how we lose with any of those three, depending upon who makes it through the primary.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the state legislature. Democrats have this slim majority in the House and the Senate right now. Will the Democrats hold on to those majorities? And what will be the issues that Democrats run on now that, you know, the Dems are totally in power in Olympia?
So jobs and healthcare continue to be the big issues all the way through. I think for folks, education being another one. And again, affordable housing probably being the fourth. So those are really the intersectional issues where it doesn't matter where you are in the state. That's what people are talking about. What they want to know is how does that impact their lives in their legislative district. Again, if they're in Chihuahua, if they're in White Salmon, you know, if they're in Bellingham, they want to know how that's going to impact them in those particular races. Democrats have looked at this very, very differently. And I think for the past 10 years, and you've seen it around the country, we've lost over 1,100 legislative seats around the country as Democrats by ceding ground and not running in different races in areas that we thought were purple or red. Well, no more for the Washington State Democrats, at least not on my watch. We have candidates running in every single legislative district in the state of Washington. We are running terrific candidates in 97 of 98 House races. and 23 of 24 state Senate races. And 70% of my new candidates are women or people of color or folks from the LGBTQ community or a combination of one, two, or all three of those. So we really are putting together different candidates, people who grew up in those areas, who understand the needs of the communities. Time after time, the Republicans, they've got the same old white guy who's running in those races, and I think we're going to be incredibly competitive.
But when you say you're running on issues like healthcare, jobs, affordable housing, I mean, those are just issues that everybody talks about. But what's the solution that the Democratic candidates this time around are going to say, if you elect us and give us that majority again, we are going to do blank on that issue of jobs or healthcare or affordable housing?
Sure, we're going to do that in the 2019 budget cycle within the legislature. It's what's in the budget cycle that really puts together your priorities around those issues. And I think that we prove that once we're in charge, things move through. We saw that in the 2018 special session, or not special session, but 2018 short session, where so many bills that were sitting there, whether it was breakfast before the bell, making reproductive parity, equality in pay, net neutrality. I mean, so many other things that were there were Democratic issues that went back to the values of putting people first, looking for those job opportunities, making sure that everyone in the state has health care and access to health providers, and things like affordable housing. So specific solutions and specific bills, I think we'll see that come out of the session itself. But the values are not going to change. And I think that's where the values match is different between the Democratic and the Republican Party.
On a national level, does the Democrat, you hear sometimes the criticism that the Democratic Party is mostly about the resistance to Donald Trump, bashing Donald Trump. We're not Donald Trump. Do you think that the Democratic Party has a unified message of here's what we'd do if we got back in power? And if so, I mean, what is that message?
Well, I think it goes back to that whole putting people first and opportunities for everyone. I go back to that great saying, which is, we all do better when we all do better. How do we make sure that that's happening for our middle class? That's the constituency of the Democratic Party historically. The middle class is incredibly diverse in the efforts that we have going on there. So I think that that's a big piece of it. But ultimately, Trump's not on the ballot in 2018. Donald Trump is not somebody folks are going to be casting a vote about. They're going to be casting a vote about their congressperson or their representative in the state house or the state senate. So the question is, where is the values match? And are these people who support Trump and his way of doing things and the whole cabal he has there, from Pruitt and EPA to Betsy DeVos in education to Steve Mnuchin at Treasury? Or is it more like folks like Jay Inslee and Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell? I think I know where voters in Washington state are going to come down on that.
Well, let's go one issue. You brought up, I think, the GOP tax bill earlier, and it hasn't polled very well. Despite the fact that there were tax cuts in there for a lot of people. What is the Democratic message on that? Is it that if you elect us, we will come back in there and raise those taxes back up on some or all of the taxpayers? What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's not about raising taxes on the middle class. I think it's taking a look at what happened at the very top of that tax bill and the cuts that were there for corporations as well as for very, very rich individuals. People should be paying their fair share. And I think in that particular tax bill, the middle class is paying disproportionately in their fair share. I think it's the same thing with our tax system here in Washington state. As a regressive system, we cannot continue to just depend upon property taxes and sales taxes to fund what we do. So we have to be really smart about looking at potentially sunsetting a whole host of tax cuts, many of whom are 10, 15, 20 years or 20 years old, to make that happen. And then look at things like capital gains. We came pretty close on that discussion last time in the cycle.
Or what about, I mean, a state income tax? I mean, you know, this is something that the Republicans will also throw out there in every
Absolutely.
State legislative race, but it's in the state party platform, isn't it? Isn't it a goal?
You know what? Our activists on the state party side would love to see a tax system that is less regressive for everyone. One of the ways that they put that through in one of the planks is talking about the potential for a state income tax. But in the same way, they've looked at the potential of, if it's not a state income tax, is it a capital gains tax? Is it a corporate tax? Is it something else? I mean, the reality is we've got incredible rich guys here, right? Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, who don't pay a single dime in taxes here in Washington State on their incomes in any way, shape, or form. So I think that we need to be at least having the discussions about the fairness around these systems and how that empowers the middle class, how it gives a leg up to folks who are lower middle class or sitting in poverty, and then how we can also be fair in building small and medium-sized businesses in Washington State, because those of the job generators in the state.
I noticed that Tom Steyer, the California billionaire, is coming to Seattle here in the next week,
yeah.
And he's on this need to impeach tour about Donald Trump. Is that something that you think that Democrats should be talking about or taking a stand on in the 2018 midterms? If we get control of the House or the Senate or both, that we will try to impeach Donald Trump?
Well, I think I take my lead on Bob Mueller as to whether or not there are things that need to be done there. I think Democrats need to be running on what's happening in their district and how are they going to be solving problems for people in their district. I think Trump generates a lot of noise. I think you can go down the rabbit hole of a lot of Trump noise during this cycle. But ultimately, that has nothing to do with the people that are living in your district right now who have problems and issues that they want you to solve.
What about Jay Inslee? You mentioned him. Is he going to run for president?
You know, that's a great question for Jay Inslee. I think you might have asked him that or a couple of times.
He has been asked the question, but, you know, I mean, he's on these tours.
Should he run?
Chair of the DGA, Democratic Governors Association. He's going to Iowa.
Yeah.
Should he run?
Well, I think that Jay will be the only one to make that choice and make that decision moving forward. You know, he's doing a terrific job, though, with the DGA in looking at how we get more Democratic governors elected throughout the country. Here's the bottom line. The whole Democratic infrastructure over the last 10 years wasn't focused on states and, in fact, collapsed in some ways. It's something I'm trying to fix as state party chair. That's why we're building it up. If you look at states around the country, Republicans have the trifecta that state party chairs always want, 32 of them in 32 states, which is the governor's chair and majorities in the House and the Senate. Democrats, we only have 8 of those. So for us to be able to compete, we need to have changes happening in the governor's chair, because I do think that's the front line in the fight against Donald Trump, is that governor's seat. But also state houses, state Senate are also components of that as well. So I think Jay's working hard to get a lot of Democratic governors elected.
And surely nothing else is on his mind. But
He doesn't call me every day to let me know. But
there's another very Seattle figure who was in the news, possibly running for president, Howard Schultz. Mm-hmm. He went to the New York Times and did an interview where he sounded very much like somebody who might run for president. What do you make of Howard Schultz running for president?
Well, I think probably at this point in time, it's anybody's guess as to who's going to run for president. And many people are testing the waters about that. So, you know, I'd love, here's the plea on the podcast. You know, Mr. Schultz, if you're interested in running for president or investing in politics, feel free to call the state party chair. I've never had a conversation with you. I'd love to have a conversation with you.
All right. Well, we'll test the listenership of this podcast.
Well, Mr. Schultz, if you're listening, the state party, apparently the phone lines are open.
Yes. And he can make his pledge now, too. No.
Of course, you know, it's been speculated he could run as an independent, too. So we don't really know where he's at.
And we don't, you know, it's kind of interesting, too. I think we've built, as Democrats, a really great coalition in this cycle in Washington State with people who identify themselves as Democrats, but for folks who identify themselves as independents, too. Folks from Indivisible, Swing Left, Sister District, Our Revolution, Code Blue, you name it. So I think what you're seeing is a little bit of a softness, maybe in party ID, but a lot of hardness around values. And what are the values that drive people, and how do they want to see those values realized in the people that they elect, and then the laws and the budget decisions those individuals pass? So I think that'll make for a very interesting presidential cycle, and also an interesting cycle in 2018 to see who gets elected, reelected, or tossed out.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's all for episode 82 of The Overcast. Thanks to our guest, State Democratic Party Chair Tina Podlodowski. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to KNKX for having us in the studio to record. If you value the locally owned independent journalism that makes this podcast possible, please visit seattletimes.com/support.
You can send us feedback on Twitter. We're @dbeekman, @jim_bruner. And please remember to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes.
And until next week, have a cloudy day.